ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So this morning, we are continuing with Canto 10, Chapter 20, and there are two texts for today, texts 25 and 26. And 26 is the verse that has a purport, so that is the verse that's on the board and the one we'll chant responsibly. So I'll read text 25 in the translation, then we'll proceed to text 26. So text 25. Evam vanam tadvanisham pakva karjura panumai go gopalai vritorantum sabala pravisa darihi. And the translation for text 25. When the Vrindavan forest had thus become resplendent, filled with ripe dates and jambu fruits, Lord Krishna, surrounded by his cows and cowherd boyfriends, accompanied by Sri Balaram, entered that forest to enjoy. And text 26, it will chant together. Denavo nanda gaminya udho barena buyasa Yayur Bhagavata Uta Drutam Pritya Snutas Danaha Denavo Nanda Gaminya Udo Barena Buyasa Yayur Bhagavata Uta Drutam Pritya Snutas Danaha. Denavo Nanda Gaminya Udo Barena Buyasa Yayur Bhagavata Uta Drutam Pritya Snutas Danaha. Please chant. Denavo nanda gaminya Udo barena buyasa Yayur bhagavata uta Drutan prityas sanaha Denavo nanda gaminya Udo barena buyasa Yayur bhagavata uta Drutam prityas nutas tanaha Denavo nanda gaminya Udo barena buyasa Yayur Bhagavata Uta Rutam Prityas Nutas Tanaha Denavo Nanda Gaminya Udo Barena Buyasa Yayur Bhagavata Uta Drutam Prityas Nutastanaham. And the word for word, Denava, the cows, Nanda Gaminya, moving slowly, Udaha, of their udders, Barena, because of the weight. Vyasa, very great. Yayu, they went. Bhagavatam by the Lord, Anutan, being called, Ururam, Drutam, sorry, quickly, Pritya, out of affection, Snuta, wet, Stanaha, their udders. And the translation for text 26. The cows had to move slowly because of their weighty milk bags, but they quickly ran to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he called them, their affection for him causing their udders to become wet. Purport, my disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada comments, quote, the cows, being fed by new grasses, became very healthy and their milk bags were all very full. When Lord Krishna called them by name, they immediately came to him out of affection. And in their joyful condition, the milk flowed from their bags. Close quote. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadaya Mayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakam Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Sha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragutanam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagadpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapsa Kanchana Gorangi Radha Vrindavanishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priyam Vanchakalpataribhyascha kripasindubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnebhyo namo namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Rumpada Swami iti namine. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami iti namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschacya Desha Tarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So these verses are somewhat descriptive, so I'm going to approach it that way. So, Srila Kavi Karnapura in Ananda Vrindavan Champu, he writes that the rainy season is creating an entire atmosphere through a rich fragrance of musk. And since the whole forest had become overrun with a dense growth of reeds, this meant that the herds of deer could no longer sport in that forest and do their regular play. But this had other implications. There was fresh grass that suddenly became very abundant because of the rains, and this was going to serve the purpose of fattening up the very joyous cows. And they no longer had to wander to more distant pastures. So right there was all the grass they required. So... and in fact, Srila Kavi Karnapura, he asks a rhetorical question. And this is his rhetorical question. What more can I say about the beauty of the rainy season, which brought supreme satisfaction to the playful prince of Vrindavan. So I'm going to try to look a little bit at his rhetorical question, something of how Krishna was experiencing satisfaction from this beautiful rainy season and everything that resulted from it. So Srila Prabhupada here is being quoted as saying that the grass had become very bountiful, so or there's a reason or something that happened as a result of the grass becoming very bountiful. And that's given here in this nice quote that's in the purport from Srila Prabhupada, and that quote is, the cows being fed by new grasses became very healthy and their milk bags were all very full. So that was the immediate result of this change that came about with the very bountiful grasses that were right there in the forest. So these full milk bags were actually overflowing. And looking at Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he writes that the milk flowed automatically from the cow's udders due to their extreme motherly affection for Lord Krishna. So it's not merely the one reason given is that the bountiful grasses were producing these very full milk bags, but there's a second reason, and that's coming from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that the overflowing of the milk bags was actually due to the affection that the cows had for Lord Krishna. So there's a description of the nature of this interaction that's happening between the cows and Lord Krishna. And this is as follows. Again, I'm drawing from Srila Kavi Karnapura in Vrindavan, Ananda Vrindavan Champu. He writes, during this time, the cows ambled lazily under the shady trees. Krishna beautified the entire scene by sitting nearby on the root of a tree and singing a wonderful melody. The cows looked lovingly at Krishna while munching the plentiful grass. The sound of their teeth cutting the grass was very pleasing. So, you know, you've got this entire atmosphere being evoked, everything to the musk fragrance in the air, to the sound of the teeth actually cutting into the grass. Krishna sitting at the root of a tree and this beautiful melody coming out. And all in this very lush, grassy atmosphere with not a deer in sight. of course, the reason for Krishna and Balaram to have entered the forest is given. They had entered to enjoy the new seasonal atmosphere. So precisely this that's been described, that's the reason that they entered the forest. And this is actually given by Srila Prabhupada in Krishna book as the reason why they entered the forest. So the forest itself, and this we get from text 25, it was replete with dates, mangoes, blackberries, and other fruits. So text 25 describes it like this. Vrindavan forest had thus become resplendent, filled with ripe dates and jambu fruits. So text 25 gives the two fruits, and we get from Krishna book that actually there were additional fruits like the blackberries and the mangoes in the forest. But it's interesting, the two particular fruits that are highlighted in Srimad Bhagavatam in text 25, the jambu fruit, it's also known as Java apple, so also grows in Java, and it's pink in color and it's pear-shaped. So I'm not familiar with the jambu fruit, but apparently one can even order it if one wants to have an exotic indoor plant in the present days. I learned this. And in fact, we read of Jambu Dweep, and the reason Jambu Dweep is given that name is because there were many jambu trees. So this pinkish fruit, pear-shaped. The main usage of this jambu fruit is to relieve tiredness. So interesting, all the play that goes on. The fruit is used to relieve tiredness. And if there's any wheezing, should somebody have some sort of, allergy to pollen or something of that nature, it takes care of any wheezing difficulty. And it also improves digestion. So all the things that are essential, both for the season and for the particular activities of the Cowherd Boys. So the fruit is serving very many purposes. And now dates, on the other hand, they act as a cardiac tonic. So the heart gets very strong. And this is according to Ayurved. And it also balances all the doshas. So it gives strength. And it also has immunity boosting properties. So you can see somehow this amazing arrangement that's all the health-giving properties of the two fruits that are present there are also part of the happiness and well-being of all the Cowherd Boys. Now, Srila Prabhupada writes that in fact Krishna was very much pleased when passing through the Vrindavan forest, in the areas of Govardhan Hill in particular. And this is him writing in Krishna book. So this is what Lord Krishna sees. On the bank of the Yamuna, he saw all the trees decorated with beehives pouring honey. And there were many waterfalls on Govardhan Hill. And the flowing sound of the water was a very nice sound. So you can see how the whole atmosphere is pretty extraordinary. Krishna heard them as he looked into the caves of the hill. So there's Govardhan Hill providing caves as well. And when the rainy season was not ended completely, but was gradually turning to autumn, sometimes, especially when there was rainfall within the forest, Krishna and his companions would sit under a tree or within the caves of Govardhan Hill. This is Srila Prabhupada writing in Krishna book. And enjoy eating the ripened fruits. So these amazing two fruits that we're hearing about, they were actually being eaten in the caves of Govardhan Hill. And somehow there were trees also within the caves. I don't know, because that's the description. They would sit under a tree or within the caves. So choice. It was a choice of two places to sit. And they would talk with great pleasure. So that's Srila Prabhupada writing. So when Krishna and Balaram were in the forest, so of course they're having these ripened fruits, but at the same time, Mother Yasoda would send them some fruits. But in addition to the fruits that she would send, there would be sweetmeats and rice mixed with yogurt. So in addition to what they were finding in the forest and that they were already eating, those ripened fruits, the jambu fruits, the dates, Mother Yasoda was sending additional foodstuffs, additional fruits. Not mention what she was sending, but the sweetmeats and the rice mixed with yogurt. So Krishna would take them, sit down on a slab of stone, on the bank of the Yamuna and call his friends to join him. So here's the whole scene. So while Krishna and Balaram and his friends were eating, they watched the cows and the calves and the bulls. So in the present time, one may be taking prasadam and looking at one's iPad, but this was not the case with Krishna and Balaram. They were actually washing the cows and the bulls and the calves. So that was their particular visual while they were eating. And what they were seeing was that the cows appeared to be a little tired because they'd been standing with their heavy milk bags. So by sitting and chewing grass, so the tiredness, they would sit down and they would chew the grass and then they'd become very happy. And Krishna was pleased to see them. So that's a description. And there's mention in Bhagavad Gita in 10:28 that, and this is giving some insight into the particular cows that we're talking about here in this verse of today. Krishna actually makes a comparison. So Krishna says that just as the thunderbolt, being a mighty weapon, represents himself, so too in Krishna Loka, in the spiritual sky, there are cows that can be milked at any time, and they give as much milk as one desires. So these are the cows we're referring to here. So they also desire trees from which anyone can take all kinds of fruits. So one tree may have any fruit that one desires. One desires and the fruit is manifest there on the particular tree. So it's called a desire tree. And as much as one may desire, the tree will produce the particular fruit that's wanted. So, and in the spiritual realm, there's also that the land itself is called a touchstone. So it means that one touches iron to something and it turns to gold. So the particular verse 10:28 that I was referencing in relation to these cows being able to be milked at any time and giving as much milk as one desires, that verse is Ayudhanam Aham Varjam. Denunam asam kamaduk prajanas chasmi kandarpa sarpanam shanti vasukihi. There's further mention of comparisons that Krishna makes, but the first two lines refer particularly to the Surabhi cow. So Nectar of Devotion states that actually, wherever Krishna is present, there's limitless opulence. So we're just getting a little picture painted here of the scene of the cows and Krishna and the cowherd boys in the forest. But there's an example that's given in relation to this idea that wherever Krishna is present, there's unlimited opulence. When Krishna was living in Dwarka, and he'd expanded himself into 16,108 forms, each and every expansion residing in a particular palace with a particular queen, in that situation, he was giving in charity from each palace an aggregate number of, this is the number, 13,054 cows. Completely decorated with nice clothing and ornaments, he was giving them in charity on a daily basis. So we read about kings, you know, performing great sacrifices and then giving cows that are decorated to the brahmanas, and it might be a large number of cows. But Krishna, in Dwarka, functioning as a king in his 16,108 forms, In each of the forms, on a daily basis, he was giving in charity 13,054 cows. So quite extraordinary. So great was the value of such a number of cows being given in charity that it immediately attests to the extremely magnanimous nature of Krishna. So everything indicates something of the extraordinary nature of Krishna, and in the same way that the giving of cows in charity by Lord Krishna attests to his magnanimous nature, so too his quality of religiousness is visible. And there's a joke given in Nectar of Instruction for some reason to indicate this particular quality of religiousness that Lord Krishna has. And it's actually Narada Muni who says to Krishna, so here is what he says to Krishna. "My dear Lord of the cowherd boys, your bulls," and bulls are the representation of religion, "while eating grass from the pasturing ground and moving on their four legs, have certainly eaten up all the grass of irreligion." So it's supposed to be very amusing. I mean, we're hearing about the eating of the bountiful grass and the cows and their particular milk bags becoming very full. But Narada Muni refers to the bulls and actually says that he's making a comparison that in the same way that the bulls have eaten up all the grass on the pasturing grounds, they actually have eaten up the grass of irreligion. So it is by the grace of Krishna that religious principles were so well cared for and that hardly any irreligion could be found. This is so because Krishna was always performing various types of sacrifice, and he was inviting the demigods from the higher planetary systems. and so, you know, we hear that that question often asked, you know, why the demigods aren't visiting at the present time. It all has to do with this issue of that sacrifices aren't being performed in this kind of way. So Krishna was proud to see the beauty of the forest. And Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book that due to the rainy season, such beauty is a manifestation of his own energy. So material energy isn't independent of its actions. So nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, but the living entity is the cause of their own suffering and enjoyment in this world, and that's from Bhagavad Gita 13:21. So I'm bringing that up because of this interesting point that any beauty that was there, and we're hearing about all this beauty that's present in the forest and with the cows and the fruits, it's a manifestation of Krishna's energy, and material energy is also Krishna's energy. so it appears to be causing material cause and effect. But in the case of the living entities, because they're working on satisfying their own senses, then they're actually causing their own suffering and enjoyment. So Bhagavad Gita 13:21, "Karya karana kartritye hetu prakriti uchate purusha sukha dukanam boktritve hetur uchate." So material nature is responsible for the way the body and the senses take shape in various living entities. So it might be, you know, the cow's body, the bull's body, the human body. But at the same time, the particular creation on the part of material nature is due to the sensual pleasure. So the particular entity is wanting to have that kind of sensorial enjoyment. So hence the residence in a particular body, and material nature creates that body. In the real state, meaning, you know, from the point of view of the spirit soul, there's always enjoyment. And this is epitomized by the enjoyment that we're hearing of Krishna and his relationship with the cows and the bulls. And the other thought that here is coming, because they're relatively simple verses, I'm going to read a description coming from Srila Sanatan Goswami on this, the beauty of the scene, and also how on the spiritual plane that enjoyment is there from him as an observer as well. So he puts it this way: the constant swinging of their tails created a marvelous scene of pure effulgent beauty. Upon filling their bellies, the cows lost all desire to eat any more grass. To find relief from the heat of the day, they rested amidst the soft, cooling grass and slowly chewed their cud. Turning their gentle faces towards Krishna, the cows glanced at him with love and gratitude. Krishna took great delight in seeing them. So it's an all-absorbing, loving relationship that's going on. And every particular movement and, I guess, external manifestation of the cows is indicative of something of their relationship with Krishna. So be it their the bags overflowing, or be it that they're swinging their tails, it's reflexive of the beauty that's within the relationship, and also the happiness that they're feeling, the affection they're feeling, and in the same way, Krishna's feeling tremendously pleased to see them. Or in fact, he's experiencing great delight, it says. So there's a relationship, a very wonderful relationship. And Srila Sanatan Goswami, he actually says a prayer in relation to this scene. So this is his prayer. During the rains, you made the forest splendorous and enjoyed your monsoon pastimes, resorting to the hollows of caves and trees and eating roots and fruits. So for him, it's a prayer, actually, just remembering this very beautiful scene of the forest being so splendorous and Krishna sitting in the hollows of the caves and eating the roots and fruits. So that was as much as, you know, came from these two verses. If there's any thought connected to this topic, they were relatively simple verses, but kind of descriptive and indicative of the very loving relationship and the kind of enjoyment that's there on the soul level. If there's any thought?
Can you read that description of Kavi Karnapur one more time?
Right in the beginning. Okay, so Srila Kavi Karnapura, oh yes, this is before he came, great. He writes that the rainy season brought a new fragrance of musk, which saturated the entire atmosphere. And another description where he says, oh yes, here it is. Since the whole forest had become overrun with such a dense growth of reeds, the herds of deer could no longer sport and play Fresh grass abounded everywhere to fatten the joyous cows that no longer wandered in distant pastures. That was one description of his. Here was another description. During this time, the cows ambled lazily under the shady trees. Krishna beautified the entire scene by sitting nearby on the root of a tree and singing a wonderful melody. The cows looked lovingly at Krishna while munching the plentiful grass. The sound of their teeth cutting the grass was very pleasing. So those are two descriptions that came from him.
That's pretty loud. Hare Krishna, thank you for your class.
Krishna. So,
I mean, obviously, you know, generally speaking, we can't remember a whole class, but the highlight that stood out for me is you were mentioning when we try to please our own senses, then we're the cause of our own suffering. And I really appreciate that because, like Lord Chaitanya told Rupa Goswami, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shant Bhuti Muti Siddhi Kami Sakaliya Shat. When we try to please Krishna, we're peaceful, shanti. When we try to please our own senses, bhuti, then we're unpeaceful, we're disturbed all the time. And one thing I take from the chapter 2, verse 14 of the Bhagavad Gita, I really appreciate that verse because it basically says persons, places, things, and circumstances, they're like the weather. Sometimes the weather is good, sometimes the weather is bad. Sometimes people are good, sometimes people are bad. Sometimes things don't go our way, sometimes things don't go our way. So we see that controlling the weather is outside our control. Building a shelter is inside our control. So we see also controlling people is outside our control. Building character, that's inside our control. Building our humility, our tolerance, our forgiveness. That's why there's a nice quote that says, happiness and freedom begin with a clear understanding of one principle. Some things are within our control and some things are not. It is only after you have faced up to this fundamental rule and learn to distinguish between what you can and can't control that inner tranquility and outer effectiveness become possible. So my question is that generally speaking, we see that this is the cause of all problems between any relationships. And Prabhupada, maybe you could expand on a point that Prabhupada makes in chapter 17, verse 15 of the Gita. It talks about austerity of speech. He says that one should not try to instruct others unless that person has accepted him as his mentor or his guide or his, you know, his shiksha guru. But we see this goes on all the time. So sometimes we see that a doctor would never prescribe medicine for somebody that's not his patient because we see there's so many varieties of devotees and our level of faith is completely different. So what prescription may work for one devotee would not work for another devotee because we're at different levels. But we see everyone wants to give their prescription of how to instruct us. So my question is that sometimes we criticize others. You shouldn't instruct me. And then we waste our time criticizing others. Don't instruct me. Don't instruct me. So what are some steps we could do from that angle of vision? We have no control of whether people try to instruct us. So what should our disposition be? Because we see people waste their time and, you know, instead of discussing Krishna and minding their own business, just walk away from the situation, they waste their time arguing with people. It's Kali Yuga. So what do you say to a person who always complains that this person is trying to instruct me, that person is trying to instruct me, instead of walking away from the situation? Speak Krishna Gita. So they may criticize you, may dishonor you. That's okay. That happens to all of us. Good weather, bad weather. So I don't know if my question was clear, but those are some points that I keep in mind. I'll listen.
Thank you, Shabbatip. So the question you raised was, if someone's attempting to instruct one, and the way you worded the question was interesting because it's got implications. why would one not just walk away and... But at the same time, one runs into the problem that one's feeling critical and complaining about the fact that somebody was attempting to instruct one. Well, if one is hearing some instruction, it's got to be relevant to the relationship, and it's got to be relevant to the common area of service. And if that person is connected with one in terms of service, and that person truly has a position where they can actually offer advice or some helpful thoughts to assist one in one's service, one can be very grateful that that person is taking that trouble. But because if one's on the ego plane, and it's difficult to feel that somebody is actually offering one advice, one is resistant to that, then one can still hear it and go away and try and readjust one's state of mind. Because if one really thinks about something that somebody has said to one, if it was coming from a place of sincerity and the person truly is involved in one's area of service, one can actually see it that the devotee is actually from a Krishna conscious perspective, is actually giving some direction that can assist one. So it's necessary to reflect a little bit. The struggle with the ego can always be there, because it's not everybody that one can hear from. I mean, it's like that. But one has to be practical. Is the person connected to my service? Is the person somebody who works in the same sphere that I'm working? So that has to be the criterion that needs to be met. So one doesn't even have to look, is the person in a superior position or not a superior position? It doesn't matter what the position of the person is, because it's very hard often to even evaluate the position of somebody. But if the person's working in one's same area of service or work, then one should give consideration to what the person has said, just on a very practical level. It's natural in any workspace, there's got to be some dialogue about what's been done. It's natural. I mean, it's not that one is, one independent being functioning separate from all other entities and is merely pursuing whatever one's own particular goal or own ideas are. You know, one's working in a broader realm, and there's a web of persons and interrelated services or work, and so there has to be communication. So if one just hears it that way, something is being communicated, let me reflect, I'm running into this problem that the ego has reared its head, and I just feel, you know, somebody's taken a superior position and I may not be accepting. Don't even think of the inferior, superior position. Just think of, you know, what is being communicated here in terms of the common shared workspace. That's all there is to it. The ego part, it's true, there's you know, the ego is a kind of the ideas one has of oneself. So that's a completely separate thing. So one has to sit down and look at, you know, how am I viewing myself? Am I viewing myself as a person who doesn't need anybody to give any advice? I know best, or I know everything related to this area of work. I can function independently without any input. Now, if one has to look at that. And so if indeed one is seeing oneself that way, you know, one may have to talk to one's mind and, you know, say, listen, right now, this isn't the right approach. I'm actually working in a situation with somebody else in this area of work, and I actually need to hear the other person's views on this work because we're working together. So, you know, you have to speak to the mind a little bit, and then gradually the ego can adjust. You know, the ego is unbending. It's got its, like, fixed ideas. So Gradually, the ego adjusts to one's picture of oneself changes as one performs a different kind of action. So if you perform the action of actually hearing what somebody has said to you or to oneself, you open up, you enrich yourself. And it also breaks down something of the stuck ego that's so resistant and so blocked off to human interaction. So one just changes one's action. So something that one wouldn't normally do, one does. One actually, if one can't at that moment here, at least one goes away and tries to think rationally how what has been said is actually beneficial to the fact, and it's connected to more than myself, other people in this work situation.
That was a very nice answer. Thank you. Regarding your answer, and I really appreciated your answer because we do have to work together with each other, and we may not accept in different services, so it's definitely valued to hear others' opinion. And unfortunately, we see that in many situations, because we can't control whether people disagree with us, disagreements are going to happen. And we may reflect later, this is my ego talking, and this is why I disagree. However, we see a scenario where people may be externally right, but internally wrong. They start criticizing and slandering the person. The other person may be externally wrong, but internally right, because they don't criticize others. So we see a scenario like that comes up all the time. It doesn't matter. We may be right, we may be wrong, but we see that the respect deteriorates. We go tell people how bad of a person they are, generally speaking. And one last point, maybe you could expand on that, but one, I appreciate your point where you were like, people may be our sincere well-wishers. And Bhaktisiddhanta also says that he says that everyone is actually a sincere well-wisher, whether it's constructive criticism or destructive criticism. In the Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava, there's a chapter called The Revolutionary Preacher of Truth. He says, when Bhagavan is merciful to me, he will send unlimited persons to speak sour words to me just to teach me tolerance. And we see that the good qualities are only meant to be used when things don't go our way. Just like we build a shelter. Why? Because we expect the weather to go bad. If we always expect the weather to go our way, then we're stupid, we're foolish. So we build character because we should expect things to go our way, whether it's constructive criticism, destructive criticism. But building character always allows you to maintain your integrity, your respect, whether you're externally right or whether you're externally wrong. So maybe you could speak about being externally right, but internally wrong by criticizing the person you disagree with and telling everyone how bad of a person they are because they disagree with me, or I was right and I've proved I was right.
So you're looking at this problem that persons may run into of needing to be right. One shouldn't say one is right. It's looking at a problem of believing that one is right or the need to be right. So I mean, if one has an attitude of needing to be right, it means that generally one's going to be extremely sensitive to anything coming one's way, because it's, after all, coming from the outside. And it means one has to make internal adjustment. So internal adjustment means one has to do a lot of reflection. One may have to rearrange one's thoughts. One may have to rearrange one's attitude. And that's a lot of work. So it's much easier to just say, I'm right, everybody else is wrong. Then you don't have to make any adjustment whatsoever. You can just maintain your internal world exactly as it is. So that's a very easy route to take and not really conducive to growth. One wants to grow as a human being, and part of the growth is indeed to do some internal examination. It's essential because one's perspective is very much tinged by the particular modes of nature that one is under the influence of, and is one perspective. So it's definitely necessary to, especially if somebody's coming from a more impartial position, it's definitely necessary to hear other views. Definitely necessary. And the other view is most likely a very correct view if it's coming from a more experienced devotee, somebody who's got a much greater understanding of Krishna consciousness or a much greater understanding of even the service area that one is working in. So it's definitely not conducive to growth to block that. And one will keep oneself a very small-minded person. One will keep oneself a very unhappy person if one doesn't actually bravely attempt to look at one's own internal makeup. It's necessary as part of Krishna consciousness. One has to do internal examination. But to stay in the position of being right is definitely a very limiting position to take, like extremely limiting position. I mean, it's like declaring I'm not going to grow as a human being. So it's not an ideal position at all. And that position goes along with a great deal of blame. When you need to be right, blame comes next. One has always got a finger pointing at somebody. So you definitely don't want to be in that position. It's a very unhappy and lonely position. So, yeah. So best to cultivate, you know, meditative quality and try to go the Krishna conscious route of you know, happily taking advice that's being given by those or a person who's more experienced than one in that particular area of service. Just and meditate carefully on what's been told to one, because the person is understanding something of one's nature. So what one is hearing from that person, one should actually meditate on. And this allows for some detachment from that position of being right. Yeah. There's some thoughts. So thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.